This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Truce's Honeymoon from Hell, written by R.L. Mathewson, performed by Mackenzie Hart. Prologue. Just in case you forgot where we left off. 3 months later. You spoil him, Mrs. Brown pointed out with a smile, as she carefully placed another apple pie on the table to cool. He deserves to be spoiled, Elizabeth said, easily returning the older woman's smile as she looked over the pie she'd made to surprise her husband. For the past 4 months, Robert had been working day and night, taking any job that he could get his hands on, to make sure that they were well prepared for the coming winter. They'd heard that winters in New England could be especially harsh, so he was making sure that they were well prepared. When he wasn't working on a job trying to earn more money for the coming winter, he was chopping wood, building a shed, fixing the barn for their horses, checking the roof, windows, and fireplaces to make sure that they were properly secured, building shelves in the root cellar to make sure that they had plenty of space for their food. He was making sure that she and the baby had everything they were going to need. He was working himself into exhaustion. Every time she pointed that out, he smiled and gave her a kiss, as he told her that she was well worth it. He promised her that things would slow down in the winter, and he would rest then. But she knew that he was lying. He already had enough orders for furniture, chests, and 100 other things to keep him busy during the winter. He's going to be upset when he finds out that you were working, Mrs. Brown said, as she pulled another pie out of the oven. He's not going to be upset, Elizabeth said, knowing that was true. Robert wouldn't be upset when he found out that she hadn't stayed in bed like the doctor had ordered. He would be furious, which was why she also made him some apple pastries, so that he would be too busy eating to yell at her. He was such a hypocrite, she thought, as she loaded a small tray with the pastries, with the hopes that they would be enough to soften him up enough to take her for a walk. It was okay for him to work himself to death, but it wasn't okay for her to do anything more strenuous than to turn over in bed. She appreciated that he was concerned for her. Really, she did. But if she had to stay in that bed for one more day, she was pretty sure that she was going to scream. She needed to move around, to work, to go for walks, anything that would take her mind off her huge stomach, the cramps that had started yesterday and wouldn't leave her alone, and the fact that she was bored out of her mind. Taking a deep breath and praying that the walk would help ease her cramps, she picked up the tray and, unfortunately for her, waddled to the doors. It took her longer than she would have liked, but she eventually made it to the door, and with Mrs. Brown's help, managed to step outside. Murmuring her thanks to the older woman, Elizabeth started the long process of walking to the barn, where her husband was hard at work building a chest for the Fairchild family. It really was a beautiful day. The weather had cooled considerably over the past couple of weeks, making it the perfect weather for enjoying the outdoors. She hoped to be able to enjoy it before the baby came, along with the snow. They were sure to keep them trapped inside for most of the winter. A few steps later, she was forced to stop as a cramp tore through her back and stomach, proving her point that lying around for the past month had done her absolutely no good. She needed fresh air, sunshine, and a bit of exercise. Once the cramp had dulled down enough for her to move, she took a deep breath and continued towards the barn, but she didn't make it 5 steps before another cramp tore through her back and stomach, robbing her of the ability to breathe. Elizabeth, a familiar voice said, drawing her attention to the very handsome man walking towards her, appearing surprised and pleased to see her. Is that really you? James asked, placing his satchel on a bench by the rose bushes as he walked past it on his way to her. She opened her mouth to answer him, but a choked sob escaped her as she lost her grip on the tray. She bit back a cry as she cradled her arms around her stomach and leaned forward, praying that she wasn't about to lose the baby. It was too early for the baby. Elizabeth, James asked, sounding worried as he rushed over to her and wrapped his arms around her as best he could. But she was rather large now, making the job nearly impossible. What's wrong? She didn't get a chance to answer him before she felt a rush of liquid pour down her legs. It was quickly followed by another one of those vicious cramps that left her barely able to breathe. She reached up and grabbed onto James's arms as cramp after cramp tore through her body, until all she could do was scream the one thing that she knew would make it all better. Robert! It's beautiful, Mr. Fairchild said in a reverent whisper as he ran his fingertips over the intricate designs of the bassinet. How much do you want for it? Robert chuckled as he placed the sheet back over the bassinet to keep it protected. Thank you, but it's not for sale. Mr. Fairchild smiled. Fair enough. For your child. Yes, Robert said proudly, as his gaze shifted to the other covered furniture that he'd built for their baby. The baby will be here soon enough, Mr. Fairfield said with a chuckle, as he moved to kneel in front of the chest that Robert made for the man's future daughter-in-law. Not soon enough, Robert said, leaning back to give the man some space to look over the chest. Only a month more to go before he was holding their baby in his arms, their miracle child, and he couldn't wait. There were no words to describe how he felt about this child. They were getting a second chance to be parents to this child, and he wasn't going to waste it. He was going to... Robert! Have a heart attack, he realized, as Elizabeth's blood-curdling scream reached his ears. Before he realized what he was doing, he was running out the door, barely aware of Mr. Fairchild following him or demanding to know what was wrong. The only thing that he cared about at that moment was getting to Elizabeth and killing whoever was hurting her. When he ran out of the barn and into the yard, terror shot through him as he watched a man hover over Elizabeth as she curled up on her side as she screamed his name over and over until he found himself running towards her and tackling the bastard. What the hell did you do to my wife? He demanded as he shoved the smaller man to the ground and raised his fist, ready to kill him with his bare hands, when recognition hit hard. James? What the hell are you doing here? Besides getting my ass kicked and having your wife scare the living hell out of me? James demanded as he shoved Robert away and got to his feet. I came to talk to you. Elizabeth's screams brought his attention back to where it belonged, as happy as he was to see his brother again, and that he was speaking to him again. James was going to have to wait. Minx, Robert asked as he crawled over to where his wife lay, curled up into a ball and panting. What's wrong? Instead of answering him, she squeezed her eyes shut and shook her head. Is it the baby? He asked, praying that the answer was no. It was too soon for the baby. They had another month before the baby was supposed to be born. Reluctantly, she nodded as a sob escaped her. Please don't let us lose the baby, he prayed as he carefully picked her up and carried her into the house, because he didn't think that either one of them would be able to survive the loss this time. He's coming too, he vaguely heard James say. Huh? Was his only response as he struggled to figure out how he'd ended up lying face down on his bedroom floor. I did tell him not to come in here, James said, sounding amused as he helped roll Robert over onto his back. This is why men don't belong in the labor room, Mrs. Brown said, sounding put out as she tossed a wet cloth at him. It hit him in the face before falling off and landing on the floor, leaving Robert even more confused. What happened? He asked numbly as he struggled to sit up, but a wave of dizziness had him lying right back down. His answer was the beautiful cry of a baby. Actually, it sounded more like twins, James said with a huge grin as he helped Robert sit up. Twins, Robert repeated, not understanding what James was saying. Twin boys, James said, chuckling as he reached down and dragged Robert to his feet. That's why your wife was so huge. I was not huge, Elizabeth said, not sounding very mad at all, as she drew his attention towards the bed, where she was curled up on her side, smiling down at two wiggling but healthy-looking babies. What happened? He asked, struggling to remember what the hell happened. What do you remember? James asked, dragging him over to the bed, where his family was waiting for him, and helping him carefully lie down next to the most beautiful babies that he'd ever seen. Not much, he admitted, trying to shake his head clear. Well, after you carried Elizabeth in here and sent for the doctor, your formidable maid, Mrs. Brown, kicked us both out. While we waited for the doctor, you and I had a long overdue discussion, where you apologized profusely for being a selfish bastard and begged my forgiveness, James said, sounding amused and drawing Robert's glare. With a roll of his eyes and a few muttered words, James carefully sat down at the end of the bed and reached over so that the baby nearest him could grab onto his finger. Fine. I apologize for being a bastard and not saying goodbye to you. That's all? Robert asked with a frown as he reached down and softly caressed his son's head. Well, you did apologize for everything, James said, sending him a smile. I'm sorry for not realizing that you were in love with her, Robert. Our parents are sorry as well. They should be here in a few weeks to tell you themselves. I should have realized that something was going on. There's nothing to apologize for, Robert said, giving him a reassuring smile, before he returned his attention to the baby, who was pulling his finger to his mouth. Oh, yes, there is, Mrs. Brown said, stepping up to the side of the bed to smile down at the babies. You gave the doctor and me heart failure when you came running in here like that. I ran in here, Robert asked, racking his brain, trying to remember, but it was all a bit fuzzy. James chuckled. As soon as Elizabeth started screaming, you broke free, ran into the room, caught one look at your wife giving birth, and promptly passed out. I don't remember any of that. And I doubt that any of us will ever forget, James said with a wink that had Elizabeth laughing softly as she leaned down and pressed a kiss against the squirming baby's foot that kept lightly kicking at her. He looked at Elizabeth, noting the exhaustion and pure joy in her eyes as she looked down at their boys. She looked so damn beautiful, and he couldn't help losing his heart to her all over again. Twins, Minx, he said, gently pulling his hand away from his son so that he could push a damp strand of hair behind Elizabeth's ear. Twins, she repeated with a pleased smile. He leaned in, careful of the baby, now trying to grab onto his shirt, and brushed a kiss against his beautiful wife's lips. I love you, Beth, he said, using the name that she hated to tease another smile out of her. And I love you, Robert Lemonade. The start of their happily ever after, before we rewind just a bit and get to where things went wrong. 4.5 years later. Did you bring it? Robert demanded as soon as the coach door opened. James chuckled as he stepped out, his eyes dancing with amusement as he held up a dark gray rock. You mean this rock that you so kindly asked for? The one that I had to travel to London for in the middle of the night and search the park for 6 hours in the freezing rain because it was a matter of life and death? He asked dryly as he tossed the rock to Robert. Thank God, Robert sighed, catching the rock and barely sparing his brother a glance as he headed for his shop. What? No, thank you, James? I missed you, James? James asked, veering off to go greet Elizabeth and the children who were playing by the garden. Keep Elizabeth busy for an hour or two, was all he said as he pulled his shop door closed behind him, praying that he didn't accidentally break this one as well. Elizabeth released a sigh as she leaned against the tree and watched as James played with her babies. He was such a wonderful uncle, and from what she'd heard from the rest of the family, a wonderful father as well. He was so kind and sweet, she thought, laughing when the twins tackled him to the ground so that they could show him how to give a proper bear hug. Her lips twitched with amusement when James pretended to turn into a bear and chased the twins all while cradling her youngest, giggling son carefully in his arms. Her smile turned watery as she looked down at the folded parchment in her hands. James had turned her dreams into a reality. About a year ago, he'd been looking through the estate's old ledgers and had come across her plans. Not sure what to make of them at first, he'd questioned Mary and Anthony, who were only too happy to finally tell him what they thought about Heather burning through the fortune that was meant to help the poor. Shocked, he'd taken another look at her plans. Then he took a look at his wife's outrageous spending, and what he saw had him finally putting his foot down and limiting her spending to a modest monthly allowance. As a result, Heather was no longer speaking to him, but he didn't seem to care. Elizabeth suspected that when Heather discovered that James had taken half of her inheritance and created a charity with it, that Heather would probably never speak to him again. Then again, that would probably make James the happiest man alive. She wished that he'd reconsider and move to America. She knew that he would love it here. He probably would have made the move years ago if it hadn't been for Heather. Her sister refused to even consider it, never mind visit, which meant that James visited once a year just to get a break from her. Next year, James was bringing his girls along with their parents for a visit, whether Heather liked it or not. Elizabeth suspected that she probably wouldn't like it. "It's good to see him," the deep voice that she adored said as a strong arm was carefully wrapped around her waist and she was pulled back against the man that she loved more than anything. "It is," she murmured her agreement as she turned herself in his arms so that she could wrap her arms around his shoulders. "But it's even better to see you." "Missed me," he teased as he leaned down and brushed his lips against hers. "Terribly," she said, smiling against his lips. "When I came back from feeding the baby, you were already gone."
"I'm sorry, Minx. I had some work that I needed to finish so that I could spend tonight focusing on you," he said, kissing her again.
"I have you for the whole night."
"The whole night," he promised as he leaned in to kiss her.
"What about James?" she asked, feeling bad that he'd traveled all the way from England to visit and they were abandoning him on his first night.
"Can entertain himself for one night," he said, brushing his lips against hers one last time before he stepped away. "This is for you," Robert said, as he held out a small, beautifully carved box.
She didn't have to ask him to know that he'd made the box himself. It was absolutely beautiful, and something that he would no doubt be able to get some of the merchants in town to buy. He could probably have a very lucrative business if he focused on making furniture and trinkets, but that would mean spending long hours away from her and the children, and she knew that he didn't want that. Instead, he settled for making the things that he loved in his spare time and focused on supporting them by building and fixing homes. He was very good at what he did and was in high demand. They would never be rich, but as long as they were able to keep their children safe and happy, then neither one of them cared.
"Happy anniversary, Minx," he said, as she opened the box and saw
a necklace made out of stones. Whatever it was beautiful, and she loved it because he'd made it for her. With a smile, she leaned up to kiss him, but he stepped back and focused his attention on the necklace.
"This white bead is from the old barn where you covered me in honey and feathers," he said, drawing her attention back to the necklace. "This bead," he said, pointing out a gray stone bead next, "is from the tree where I cut your hair off. This bead is from..."
He went on explaining where every stone had come from, pausing every now and then to smile, laugh, or reminisce about tales from their childhood. She listened as he went through each bead, growing more amazed by the minute. When he pointed out the bead from the orangery, she felt her bottom lip tremble. As he finished with the stone that he'd picked up outside their bedroom window on the night that she'd given birth to Jonathan, she found herself falling in love with her husband all over again.
"I love it,"
she said, an understatement. It was the most beautiful, thoughtful gift that anyone had ever given her. It also made her realize just how much she meant to him.
"I'm glad," he said, leaning in to kiss her, only this time she didn't let him go. "It's my turn to give you your anniversary gift, Mr. Bradford."
He was dying. There was no other explanation for it. His limbs weakly trembled as he dragged himself across the room. He couldn't think of a time when he'd been so thirsty or hungry in his life. Several times over the last 24 hours, he'd considered yelling for help, but he was beyond help. He knew that. The cause of his destruction stirred behind him. He picked up the pitcher of water and chugged the lukewarm liquid. It did nothing to quench his thirst or ease his empty stomach.
"I think I'm dying," he mumbled. A weak laugh came from the bed.
"I know I am," Elizabeth said. "We have to stop. We have to. I need food and water."
The baby, Robert. Think of the baby, she implored weakly. He took a deep breath. The baby needed food. His baby. He couldn't help grinning. His minx was making him a father again, hopefully giving him a little girl to spoil this time. He hugged the pitcher to his chest and brought it over to her. Here, drink this, and I'll get dressed and have Mrs. Brown send some food up. He frowned as he looked at the door. I wonder why they haven't checked on us by now. Probably because we scared them away, she said, as she took the pitcher from him. She almost dropped it. Her arms were so weak, but she couldn't drink lying back this way. She got up on her knees with great difficulty. The only thing that mattered was the water. She didn't care about being ladylike or anything else. She drank greedily, not caring about the water that spilled down her chin and down her chest and stomach. She was so thirsty. When she had her fill, she placed the now empty pitcher on the bed. Her eyes met Robert's intense gaze, and she knew that things were about to take a turn for the worse. Oh no, she whimpered. Robert stared at the water, dripping down his wife's breasts. He licked his lips. Every part of him, save one, was protesting the sight. He followed her frightened eyes downward. He was more than ready to go again. It felt like he hadn't had her in years instead of minutes. Elizabeth threw a pillow at him so she could scramble off the bed, desperate to make an escape. It was like that piece of his anatomy was in charge. He crawled after her. She didn't bother with a nightgown or a wrap as she ran to the door and started pounding on it. Mrs. Brown! Oh, thank the Lord, came Mrs. Brown's worried voice from behind the door. We were afraid you'd both perished. She looked back to see her husband trying to escape from the tangled sheets his foot got caught on. Mrs. Brown, listen, I haven't much time. Can you arrange for a large tray of food and drink to be delivered? She looked over her shoulder to discover that Robert was close to getting free. And water for a bath as well, please? Certainly, Mrs. Brown said, sounding amused. Robert, James suddenly said as he joined Mrs. Brown in the hall. A soft growl behind her was the only answer he could manage. Elizabeth slowly turned around, plastering her back against the door. James knocked on the door. Robert, come down with me to the tavern. I'm bored. Robert. I'm busy, Robert answered in what sounded mostly like a snarl. James' answer was a pained sigh. Come on, you've done your duty. Let's go. A loud whimper escaped Elizabeth as he pounced on her. He was handsome, wicked, and all hers. No matter how tired or weak she was at the moment, he still had this strange affect on her body after all these years, and in that moment, she wanted him more than anything. Robert? James asked, sounding unsure. Robert couldn't answer at the moment. He was busy licking the water from Elizabeth's skin. She was pinned tightly against the wall, her arms wrapped around his shoulders and her legs around his waist. In one quick move, he was sheathed inside her. He wrapped his arms around her, protecting her from the door as he thrust inside her. The door groaned its protests as its hinges and frames were put to the test. If the position hurt Elizabeth, she wasn't saying. Just the opposite, in fact. She demanded him to move harder and faster. At that moment, Robert didn't care that his brother and Mrs. Brown were standing outside the door, or that he was on the verge of starvation. He only cared about her, about his minx. He slammed into her once, twice, three times, and then she began screaming his name and doing her best to milk him dry. Lucky bastard, he thought he heard his brother mutter, but he didn't really care as he lost himself in the woman that he loved. Happy anniversary, Mr. Bradford. His minx said minutes later as she pushed him to the floor to give him his gift all over again, making him wonder if he should call another truce before they ended up killing each other. Chapter 1 Present Day.
Oh my God! Why won't you leave? Mary Beth demanded, close to crying and not really caring as she pulled the pillow over her head, wondering why he wouldn't just leave them alone.
Are you hungry? Uncle Jared asked from where he sat. Between them.
on their bed, at 2 in the morning.
I'm hungry, Uncle Jared muttered, and she didn't need to look up to know that he was pouting.
Then go home and raid your own fucking kitchen,
Darren snapped from the other side of the bed, sounding just as aggravated as she was. Actually, he sounded kind of pissed. Not that she could actually blame him, since Uncle Jared had chosen the perfect moment to saunter into their room, unannounced and apparently on a mission. Personally, she was just thankful that he'd chosen to show up after she'd stopped screaming Darren's name and begging him to fuck her harder.
Not until after we have this talk, Uncle Jared said, sounding determined and letting her know that this night from hell wasn't going to end anytime soon.
Well, it really hadn't been all that bad, considering that Darren had managed to make her scream his name at least 3 times. Darren, on the other hand, probably wasn't as understanding as she was, since she may have teased and tormented him to the brink of orgasm for over an hour. She'd just been on the verge of finally giving him what he wanted when Uncle Jared strolled into the room and threw a pair of shorts at Darren's head and tossed her one of Darren's shirts and a pair of his boxers before he granted them exactly 30 seconds to get dressed. Knowing better than to argue and waste precious seconds, she'd quickly got dressed and dove under the covers, deciding that it was for the best that she pretended that the man that had always stepped up, prepared to kick her ass when she screwed up, and was there for her when her father wasn't, hadn't just walked in on her while she was on her hands and knees giving her husband a...
So, why don't we take this downstairs and get a bite to eat while we talk, hmm?
Uncle Jared suggested, sounding hopeful and making her cringe as she pulled the pillow tighter over her head and prayed that her burning cheeks didn't set the bed on fire. She was just about to see if it was humanly possible to burrow into the mattress when she heard the unmistakable sound of a pair of handcuffs clicking shut and a heavy sigh that she was all too familiar with. It was followed by a brief silence and another familiar sigh before Uncle Jared asked,
Really?
Really, she heard Darren say firmly as she felt the bed shift seconds before her pillow was taken from her and tossed aside. Without a word, mostly because she was trying to avoid making eye contact with Uncle Jared, she wrapped her arms around Darren's shoulders as he picked her up, buried her face against his bare shoulder, and tried to pretend that she was in her happy place.
You can't avoid this conversation forever, Uncle Jared said, not really sounding all that angry for someone that had just been handcuffed to the bed by his nephew.
I'm willing to give it a shot,
Darren drawled, tightening his hold around her as he headed for their bedroom door. She kept her face buried against his chest as he carried her downstairs and into the living room, carefully avoiding the boxes that took up most of the space, and made his way to the only available seat, since the couch had been the first thing that they'd brought in. She had been the second. Darren had carried her inside their new house, laid her down on the couch, and told her to keep her ass there as the men in his family unloaded the boxes and stacked them around the house. That was 2 months ago, and they were still unpacking the damn boxes and trying to get the house ready for their babies. Their babies. She still couldn't believe that in a few months they were going to be parents. She thought this day would never come, but thanks to Zoe and Trevor, they were going to have a family of their own very soon. Darren chuckled as he sat down, thinking about the babies. How did you know? She asked, not bothering to lift her head, but instead simply closed her eyes as she relaxed in his arms.
Because, he said, pausing to kiss the top of her head with a smile of his own.
I can feel you smiling.
I can't help it, she admitted, turning her head so that she could press a kiss against his shoulder as she hugged him tighter, so unbelievably happy that she was actually tearing up.
That is, until she heard the long, suffering sigh.
He's down here, isn't he? She asked, closing her eyes in defeat as she pressed her forehead against his shoulder and accepted the inevitable.
They weren't getting rid of Uncle Jared until he did what he'd come to do. And unfortunately for her, she'd already heard this tale of Bradford bullshit a million times before, thanks to the fact that she'd grown up with him.
How'd you get the handcuffs off? Darren asked,
as he began to caress her arm and shoulder with his fingertips. "Pick the lock," Uncle Jared answered casually, as though they were talking about the weather, as she did her best to pretend that she was invisible. "We already know the story," Darren, for some reason, decided to remind him, when they both knew that there was nothing on this earth that was going to stop Uncle Jared from retelling the story.
"Then you're not going on a honeymoon?"
Uncle Jared asked in a challenging tone, practically daring Darren to try and bullshit him.
"Once the babies arrive, we won't have a chance to go on a honeymoon," Darren said evenly, deciding that arguing with Uncle Jared was the way to go.
She sighed heavily as she settled in for the long haul, because if there was one thing that she knew about Bradfords, it was that they were all stubborn, especially the males. But especially Uncle Jared.
"You'll have plenty of volunteers to watch them when the time comes," Uncle Jared shot back.
Darren was quiet for a moment before he said, "The stories are bullshit."
"You really think so?"
Uncle Jared asked, sounding amused, which was not a good thing, because that meant that he would do everything he could to prolong the torture now, just for shits and giggles.
"Yes,"
Darren said, with absolutely no hesitation, as she tried and failed to resist the urge to pinch the bastard to stop him from making this worse.
"Ow, what the hell?"
the big baby snapped as she shifted on his lap, careful to keep her face averted, since she decided that she'd probably die of mortification if she made eye contact with Uncle Jared ever again.
"You know what?"
she hissed softly for his ears only, trying to get the stubborn bastard to stop before things got worse.
"It's bullshit,"
her husband snapped, obviously deciding that continuing arguing with his uncle at 3 in the morning, when he had to be at work in 3 hours, was an excellent idea.
"Is it really?"
Uncle Jared asked, with a hint of challenge in his voice, which, of course, prompted Darren to snap.
"It is."
By this point, she knew that it was a losing battle. So it was with a heavy heart, and her gaze shifted away from Uncle Jared, that she climbed off Darren's lap, accidentally stepping on his foot in the process, multiple times, and headed towards the kitchen, deciding that she might as well make breakfast. She just decided to make pancakes when Uncle Jared said,
"Once upon a time,"
which was cut off with, "Oh, give me a fucking break," from her husband.
"I'm trying to tell you a goddamn story here."
"Then tell it and drop the bullshit," Darren said, finally accepting the fact that they weren't getting rid of his uncle anytime soon.
"I will if you'd shut the hell up and let me get to it."
"Then get to it."
"Fine, fine."
Rolling her eyes, she shook her head and sighed heavily as she reached for a large mixing bowl, while she heard Uncle Jared theatrically clear his throat from the other room.
"As I was saying, once upon a time."
Chapter 2. The start of yet another Bradford tradition. The first honeymoon from hell. 11 months after the start of the first Bradford tradition, the Bradford wedding.
"Shut up. I'm bored," James said with a long-suffering sigh as he picked up a wood shaving and began peeling layers off it.
"You could always help me," Robert pointed out, chuckling when his brother leveled a horrified glare on him.
"And you could always finish this tomorrow and go with me into town for a drink tonight," James suggested,
which was the same suggestion that he'd made every night for the past 6 months, even though he already knew that it was pointless.
"I can't," Robert said, leaning over and tilting his head to the side to make sure that the initials he'd carved on the top of the trunk were perfect.
"You really could," James pointed out absently as he gazed around the candle-lit workroom.
"I could," Robert admitted with a smile as he stood up. "But you're not going to," James finished for him, shaking his head in disgust,
because he really couldn't understand why Robert would rather spend the night with his wife and children instead of in town, drinking, playing cards, and flirting with every woman that looked his way.
"No," he said, tilting his head to the other side as he ran his hand over the top of the trunk, making sure that the finish was smooth. "I'm not."
I'm only going to be here for another 2 weeks, James reminded him with a pout. It had him chuckling as he tossed the rag he'd used to apply an oil finish to the trunk aside and finally deemed the project finished.
And you're going to be very busy for at least one of those weeks, Robert decided to remind his brother as he reached over and turned off the lantern on his workstation.
I knew that I should have left for England last month when I had the chance, James said with a pathetic groan that Robert wasn't buying as he rubbed the back of his neck and tossed the wood shaving aside. They both knew what was waiting for James back home, and he wasn't in any rush to return to his wife. He'd married her for the inheritance and had instantly regretted it. Since they'd said their I do's, Heather had taken residence in one of the luxurious townhouses that had originally been left to Elizabeth in a fit of rage and had refused to talk to James since. Not that James really seemed to care. If anything, he seemed happy to get away from her, which Robert really couldn't blame him for. But what he could blame his brother for were the looks of regret that he sometimes caught him sending Elizabeth. He knew that his brother would never touch her, but that didn't hide the fact that James was more than a little in love with Elizabeth. He hated to see his brother in this much pain, but then again, if James ever acted on those fingers, Robert would tear him apart with his bare hands. But since his brother was kind enough to keep his feelings and his hands to himself, Robert would pretend not to notice.
You would have missed me, Robert said with a chuckle as he decided to call it a night.
James' lips twitched.
Perhaps, he lied his ass off, when they both knew that James would have been miserable without him in England.
But soon he wouldn't have a choice, and they both knew it. James was first in line to inherit, and as much as James would like to turn his back on his responsibilities and the unwanted wife that he now found himself with, he'd also been raised to believe that the future of their family depended on him. He would never turn his back on that, no matter how much he wanted to pretend that life back in England wasn't waiting for him. He couldn't. Too many lives depended on James to pick up when their father would one day pass away, leaving it up to him to look after their tenants, farmers, and merchants. So, as much as James would like to start over in New England and pretend that he had a choice in his future, they both knew that he didn't, because if he turned his back on his responsibilities, then it would fall on Robert's shoulders to do the right thing for their family. And they both knew that he couldn't do that. Robert couldn't go back. He couldn't turn his back on the future that he'd created for his family, on the life that he'd made for them. He just couldn't return to a life that had meant absolutely nothing to him, and they both knew it. So, to make sure that Robert was never forced to take on a role that was never meant for him, James would do whatever it took to continue the line, even if it meant going back to his wife in England and starting a family with her. The fact that James was going to do whatever it took to ensure their family's survival, as well as the life that Robert had created for his family here in New England, told him just how much he meant to his brother. They didn't say anything, because nothing had to be said. They were brothers after all, and this is what they did for each other. No thanks was necessary, but they both knew that whenever James needed an escape, there would always be a place here for him when he needed it. With that being said,
"You agreed," Robert pointed out, deciding to cut through all the bullshit and get to the heart of the matter.
I know, James groaned with a mock glare, but they both knew that he was looking forward to having the run of the house and the boys all to himself. With Mrs. Brown's help, of course, which meant that he would probably end up spending the entire week teaching the boys how to blow spit bubbles and con Mrs. Brown into cooking all of his favorite foods and spoiling him rotten before he had to head back home to the harpy that was doing her best to go through their fortune before he got back. Not that she really cared that he'd left, but because she just couldn't seem to help herself. Elizabeth still had never forgiven herself for losing the inheritance to her sister, but he knew that she had no regrets. She could have done a great deal of good with that money, but in the end, he knew that she couldn't bring herself to regret what happened between them, and especially their boys. He was too much of a selfish bastard to regret what happened, but it damn near killed him that no matter how hard he worked, He would never be able to give her the life that she deserved. He'd robbed her of a life of luxury, and he could never forgive himself for that. She'd gone from being a pampered daughter of a peer to the wife of the town carpenter. She deserved better than that, and although he would never be able to give her what she deserved, he was going to do his best to make her happy, which was why he'd been busting his ass for the past few months, scrimping and saving every extra penny he could so that he could finally take her on a honeymoon. "You could always take me up on my offer and take her on a tour of Europe," James suggested with a shrug, even as he took a step back and put some space between them before Robert could get a chance to properly thank him for the offer. "Thank you, but no," he said through clenched teeth, his eyes narrowing to slits, as he sent his brother one last warning. But the stubborn bastard ignored the warning and kept going. "Think of it as a wedding gift. You could take her to Paris and Venice, treat her to the best hotels across Europe, and dine at the finest—" "Ow, you son of a bitch, stop punching me!" "Let it drop, and I will," Robert explained with a tired sigh as he walked past his brother, in absolutely no mood to argue with him tonight. With a heavy sigh that was going to get his jaw broken, James followed after him. "Consider it a gift." "No." "It would be from all of us," James added, as Robert shoved the heavy barn door open and strolled out, seriously tempted to lock his brother in for the night, but decided against it, since the tattle-telling bastard would just tell Mrs. Brown on him in the morning, and the old woman would make his life a living hell out of spite. "No," he said, forcing himself to walk down the well-worn path that he'd created over the last few months with the help of Elizabeth, who liked to visit him throughout the day with a baby on her hip and a plate of goodies to keep him going. He loved her visits and looked forward to them every day. If he had to work at someone's house or in town, he would get up an hour early and get the team ready for her, making sure to put the baby bassinets that he'd made specifically for the carriage in the back to make it easy for her to visit him. While most husbands usually bitched about their wives and took whatever excuse they could find to get out of the house, he couldn't stand going even a few hours without seeing his wife and sons. If Elizabeth wasn't able to get the boys outside to see him, then he made sure to take breaks during the day so that he could check on them, see if she needed anything, and mostly just so that he could take her in his arms, close his eyes as he tried to accept that she was finally his. No matter how many times he touched her or held her at night, he still couldn't believe that this was real, that his minx was his forever. It was funny that once upon a time, just hearing her name could ruin his day, but now he couldn't imagine going a day without hearing her beautiful name whispered from his lips as he pulled her into his arms at the end of the day and thanked God for bringing the vicious little minx into his life. "You can take her on a trip that she'll never forget," James said offhandedly as he caught up with him. "That's what I plan on doing," he said evenly, knowing that his brother was trying to do something nice for them, but it was still fucking insulting. "You can take her anywhere in the world, Robert. You don't have to live like this," James said, sighing heavily as he gestured lazily towards the large farmhouse and surrounding property, trying to sound like he was offering to save him from a life of hell. But he didn't miss the envious tone as his brother dutifully repeated the offer that their parents had tried to shove down his throat before they'd finally conceded and boarded the ship to return to England. They'd left it on James's shoulders to convince Robert to accept their offer to pay for a European tour, wet nurse, carriage, and a full line of servants to follow them as they dined at the finest restaurants in Europe, all while their every need was met. It was the type of trip that either one of them would have rightfully expected, thanks to the station that they'd been born to, but that wasn't the world that they belonged to anymore. The world that they belonged to had bills, limited resources, obligations, and the knowledge that if he couldn't work, then his family would starve. It wasn't a comfortable existence, but it was the one that he'd chosen. He'd come to America to make a new life for his family and to get a fresh start. And he couldn't do that if he allowed himself to depend on his family for support. He loved his family more than anything. But if he was going to make it, if his family had any chance at all of surviving and making a life for themselves, then they needed to do this on their own. He needed to do this on his own. He needed to know that no matter what life threw at them, that he could not only handle it, but that he could come out on top, keeping his family safe while making something of himself here. He needed to do this on his own, and that meant that he did this completely on his own, without his family's purse strings or influence. He sure as hell didn't need them paying for his honeymoon. "I don't want your money, James," he bit out, insulted that everyone in his family and in hers kept offering to throw money at them, terrified that they were going to die in the streets. "You know the money really belongs to Elizabeth," James said quietly, saying the one thing that was guaranteed to make him stop walking and turn around so that he could face his brother. For a moment, he considered breaking his brother's nose for bringing up something that was better left unsaid, but the tormented expression on James's face stopped him. "We don't want the money, James," he said, suddenly feeling every single one of those long hours that he'd worked to make sure that they had extra money in the bank so that they could survive another year without having to beg their family for help. "It should have been yours," James said tightly, a muscle clenching in his jaw as he stood there, forcing himself to look Robert in the eye. He met his brother's gaze and shook his head. "I got what I wanted." His brother's lips twitched as he nodded in understanding. "Elizabeth. Elizabeth," he agreed with a chuckle and a wink as he headed inside, more than ready to put an end to this day and crawl in bed with the woman that he loved and hold her all night. Chapter 3. "Dear, it will be fine," Mrs. Brown said, even as the normally stoic woman shot the two young women cowering in the corner a pleading look, praying that they understood the silent message that she was sending them. But of course they were still ignoring her and fixated on the young woman in her arms crying.
I don't understand what went wrong," Elizabeth sobbed, somewhat hysterically, as she hugged the basket filled with burnt biscuits, which really looked like discs of charcoal, to her chest, as she continued to sit there, in the corner, on the floor, finally having the breakdown that Mrs. Brown had been waiting for since the twins were born.
"They just got a little brown, that's all," Mrs. Brown said, trying not to glance down at the basket full of charcoal, as she told Elizabeth yet another lie, just to make it through the day. "I'm sure Robert will love them," she said, this time forcing a smile that unfortunately probably resembled a grimace, because just the thought of that boy eating these things turned her stomach, and she was a woman known for having a strong stomach.
"The boys," Elizabeth mumbled absently, looking a little lost. "I've got to make the boys something to eat."
"They've already eaten," Mrs. Brown pointed out soothingly, even as she did her best not to think about exactly how much food the babies had gone through, or the fact that they would probably require a second dinner in another hour or two. She'd raised a lot of children in her lifetime, but none of them had been anything like the Bradford twins. Not that she didn't love them, because she did, probably more than she should, since one day they would grow up and wouldn't need her. But until that day came, she was going to allow herself to foolishly love those baby boys more than anything else on this earth. It was probably the reason why she pretended that some of the things that they did didn't terrify her, like the silent way they communicated when they planned something out, the look they shared just before they did something that had run off more than a few of the village girls that she'd been able to convince to ignore the rumors that had spread through town like wildfire about the twins, and Robert's insatiable appetite, and work for the Bradfords for a few hours a week, just to lighten the workload on Elizabeth, who was determined to be the perfect mother and wife. It wasn't possible, not with a husband like Robert, and babies that could eat more than most men. A shiver tore through her, just at the thought of how much those boys could put away. While most babies their age were just learning to sit up, crawl, and starting to make the switch to solid foods like porridge and mashed vegetables, the Bradford boys were already the size of 2-year-olds and could put away more food in one sitting than all her sons and nephews combined. Sometimes at night, when she was in bed and the house was quiet, and the only thing that she had to keep her company were her thoughts, it was a struggle not to grab her bag and make a run for it. But the reminder that the twins were sweet boys that adored her and probably wouldn't resort to eating her if they had a really bad winter and ran out of food kept her there. She couldn't imagine spending her days without the Bradfords. With that being said, she really couldn't imagine how Elizabeth had lasted this long before she'd finally cracked under the pressure of keeping up with the twins. They were cute, but very demanding. Every hour, sometimes twice an hour, those boys were hunting their mother down, demanding to be fed and snuggled, while Elizabeth did her best to be the perfect wife, something that she knew damn well that Robert didn't expect or want. He only wanted Elizabeth. She would love to say that her own husband had loved and adored her the way that Robert cherished Elizabeth, but she couldn't. Never once had Roger looked at her the way that Robert looked at Elizabeth. She knew that he had grown to care for her and had adored their children, but he never loved her, not the way that Robert loved Elizabeth. She'd never seen a man look at a woman the way that Robert looked at Elizabeth, like every dream that he'd ever made had come true. It was something that made her smile every time she saw it. She only wished that Elizabeth realized just how much she meant to Robert and how little he actually cared if things were perfect. As far as she could tell, the only thing that he seemed to care about was that she was healthy and happy, which at the moment was a problem. "I can make fresh ones," Elizabeth mumbled almost desperately, looking seconds away from passing out, which again was to be expected, considering how hard she'd been working over the last few months to make everything perfect. "No, sweetie, that's okay. I'm sure that..." "Elizabeth," Robert said brightly, with that smile that belonged solely to Elizabeth, as he walked through the back door, making Mrs. Brown cringe and damn near made her whimper, because any chance of stopping this before it got worse was gone now. "Oh, God," came the soft mumble, followed by a terrified gasp as Elizabeth, who was probably surviving on less than an hour of sleep a night, jumped to her feet, dropped the basket of burnt biscuits to the floor, shoved her messy hair back, and in the process ended up spreading ash over her beautiful tangled hair as she raced to the table, grabbed a large dirty mixing bowl, and with a panicked expression on her face, began making more dough right around the time that Robert spotted her, and the smile slowly slipped away from his face. She opened her mouth to make another excuse for Elizabeth, to distract him away from the fact that his wife was beyond exhausted, covered in soot and ash, trembling and quietly sobbing because there wasn't enough lard to make another batch of biscuits, when she saw all the good humor evaporate from Robert's face, only to be replaced seconds later by a look that she prayed that she never saw again, because it was in that instant that she realized just how dangerous Robert Bradford was.
"It's okay, Robert. Just let me
watch the boys," Robert said firmly, shutting the bedroom door behind him and cutting off Mrs. Brown before she could give him another bullshit excuse.
"I thought we agreed that there would be no more secrets," he murmured softly, kissing Elizabeth's forehead as he carefully carried his trembling wife across the room, berating himself for letting this go on for so long. He'd known that she was overdoing it. Hell, it was the one thing that they were always arguing about. He'd tell her that she was overdoing it, and she'd tell him the same thing. He'd threaten to spank her bottom raw if she didn't slow down, and she'd threaten his balls. No matter what he said or did, she wouldn't listen to him. If he was going to work himself into exhaustion to take care of their family, then so was she. She didn't understand that he was doing this for them, that he had absolutely no fucking choice but to take every single job that came his way, no matter how exhausted he was, or how much he'd rather be able to sleep in with his wife in the morning, spend the day playing with his sons and making them smile. But he couldn't. When he'd sold his investments, he'd expected to have to support a wife, maybe a servant or two. But twins
Christ, he'd never expected to have boys that could eat more than most grown men. Right now they were fine. He could afford to keep a roof over their heads, clothes on their backs, and their bellies comfortably full. But he knew that could all change at any time. If he got hurt or sick, then he wouldn't be able to provide for his family, and that absolutely terrified him. So he took as many jobs as he could, pretended that he wasn't exhausted, and saved every penny that he had to make sure that his family would be well taken care of if anything ever happened to him. It was his job to provide for his family and to keep them safe, not Elizabeth's. He wasn't working day and night so that she could do the same. He wanted her well taken care of, happy, and able to enjoy herself. One of them should be able to, he thought with a resigned sigh, as he gently placed her on the edge of the bed. Ignoring her muttered protest that everything was fine, he set about wiping her tears away, pressing a kiss to her trembling chin as he carefully undressed her. He knew that she was exhausted when she couldn't even come up with the energy to argue with him, as he finally slipped her chemise off and gently pulled one of his old cotton shirts over her head, her favorite shirt to sleep in. She did, however, release an adorable little sniffle that had him biting back a smile as he pulled the covers back and helped her crawl between the covers. Before her head hit the pillow, her eyes were closed and she was softly snoring. Ah, Minx, he said with a small smile and a sigh as he leaned over and pressed a kiss to the tip of her nose. What the hell would I do without you? He asked no one in particular, not really expecting an answer because he already knew it. He wouldn't survive without her. She meant everything to him, absolutely everything. She was his heart, his soul, the reason why he pushed himself so hard to make a better life for their family. He loved and adored his boys, but Elizabeth, she was his everything. And so far, he'd failed her. He'd taken her from everything she knew, given her absolutely no choice but to start a new life, whether she wanted to or not. And now she was exhausting herself, trying to prove that she could handle this new life. Tomorrow, things were going to change. But for right now, he was going to make sure that his wife got the rest that she desperately needed. He pulled off his boots, shoved his pants down, and pulled off his shirt, tossing it on the chair in the corner, and crawled in bed behind her, determined to make sure that she was well rested for their trip. You really are going to be the death of me, Minx, he whispered, half joking as he pulled her in his arms, kissed her neck, and gave in to the exhaustion that had been plaguing him for months. He was just starting to fall asleep when the light scratching at the door caught his attention.
Sorry, Mr. Bradford, sir, but Mrs. Kinley just sent a messenger. It seems that there was a fire in her kitchen this morning, and she has no way to heat the house or cook for the children until it's fixed.
One of the timid girls that Mrs. Brown had hired from town hesitantly announced from the safety of the other side of the door, making him realize that he was going to have to put off catching up on his sleep for a little while longer. Chapter 4 The next day.
No!
Noah said firmly with a glare as he folded his little arms over his chest and glared up at Robert, matching his brother Sean's glare exactly as Robert stood there, wondering why he'd even bothered to try and reason with his sons.
She stays,
Sean bit out before his eyes narrowed dangerously on Robert.
You can go.
Biting back a few words that would have his wife going for his balls, Robert pinched the bridge of his nose, trying to ignore the headache that exhaustion and the leftover fumes from the Kinley house had bombarded him with, and focused on the two little boys standing in front of him, making the warning very clear. If he tried to leave with their mother, they would kill him. Or, at the very least, do their best to beat the shit out of him and make him rethink ever coming between them and their mother again. Robert took a slow, deep, steadying breath, praying for patience this morning. But by the time that he caught his boys sharing one of their secret and admittedly terrifying looks, it was too late.
She stays, Noah said, with an evil little smile, just as his brother's lower chin began to tremble and his big green eyes filled with unshed tears.
Sniffle.
She loves us more,
Noah mumbled, getting into character as he reached up with his little tan hand and wiped away a single tear that rolled down his cheek.